Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My guys, my lovely guys.
Okay, hey, hey, you know, we're not like playing shoots and ladders, okay? Our dad just died, and...
No, I'm sorry. I'm sad. Mm. And just thinking about how things will shake down, right? There's the board meeting coming up any minute, and I talk to Ewan, and he'll have a say, so...
You need to get a new mommy, okay? We're not your mommy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I am David Chen.
And I'm Kim Renfro.
On today's episode of Decoding TV, we're going to be recapping, reviewing, spoiling, and discussing Succession Season 4, Episode 4, entitled Honeymoon States. We will not spoil anything from future week's episodes. That includes anything on the next time on preview, but we will be spoiling everything through this week's episode, Season 4, Episode 4. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us on TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Decoding TV, where we're posting a bunch of new videos. And on our YouTube channel, I do want to call out youtube.com/decodingtv. We're often broadcasting live. We're doing cool stuff there. So be sure to subscribe at youtube.com/decodingtv. You'll get notifications whenever we go live for stuff. I know for a fact when it comes to Succession, we'll probably do the last episode live. So get subscribed now. Make sure you don't miss that. At youtube.com/decodingtv. I also want to say, if you want to support this podcast, it's very easy to do that by, obviously, you can leave a review for us wherever you find your podcast, but you can also become a paid member at decodingtv.com. Paid members get ad-free episodes, early access to episodes, and the occasional bonus episode that we record. But I also love reading the comments at decodingtv.com. There were many comments responding and reacting to last week's episode. Of course, you can also react at decodingtv@gmail.com, but let me read a few comments from decodingtv.com. Talking about Season 4, Episode 3, Connor's Wedding. Huge episode. Huge episode. Lahiro writes at decodingtv.com, "One thing I'm finding surprising is how moved people are. I found the events fascinating in the way that a nature documentary is fascinating, but strangely less moving. I really felt nothing for these people, who by and large are all truly terrible. The performances are all brilliant and believable, but not really relatable for me. There's something about these people that, even in grief, is completely detached from what I consider to be normal human behavior that makes it hard for me to feel anything for them." End quote. Another decodingtv.com member responds. His name is Logan. Logan responded, quote, "I don't know your experience and whether or not you have closely dealt with a minute-to-minute response to someone dying or having died, but that's a large part of the reason this episode hit me so hard. I just experienced my grandfather passing away in January, and he was much more like a father figure to me than a grandfather. And this episode brought that entire experience back to me in the most visceral way. The way the kids responded in this episode wasn't like how most people would respond, but it was still rooted in the very basic emotion you would expect when encountering the death of a close loved one. I think a large part of what makes the show work is that familial and essentially human drama and emotions still exist at that level of wealth, despite being so out of touch for most people. It's strangely compelling because Logan is terrible, and I don't feel terrible he died, and the kids are terrible, and I don't feel terrible that they are facing difficulties. What feels terrible about the show is knowing that these characters still feel these things that most regular people have felt, but the way it's all processed is so different and complex for a variety of reasons that the show tries to address. I guess a TLDR, it's moving because it's harrowing, a very harrowing real experience that a lot of people have felt, and it's not hard to put yourself in the shoes of terrible people if they're also going through that experience. Empathy isn't excusing who they are." End quote. Kim, I saw a lot of differing reactions to the episode. You know, some people were like, "I felt nothing." Other people, like Kim Renfro, were saying, "I was crying for quite a bit."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all season we have been kind of talking about this question of how you should watch the show, how you quote unquote should watch the show. There's no right way to watch the show, but I think it's clear that...
Yeah.
People have very differing reactions. Like, some people are so repelled by the Roys, mm-hmm, that something like last week, it doesn't have any effect on them. It's like watching something terrible happen to someone terrible. It's, you know, for many of us, they would feel nothing or possibly even some amount of pleasure in that. For others, Succession makes you see the humanity in those people, regardless of how terrible they are. Mm-hmm. And it makes you feel a deep well of sympathy. What do you think? Any further thoughts, Kim, now that you've had a little more time to process last week's episode?
I'm trying very hard to remove the word should from my vocabulary.
I shouldn't have said should.
Don't should yourself in front of all of us, David Chen.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
No, it's like it's a very human thing, and it's something that it's a word that I didn't realize I used so frequently in relation to my own feelings for a very long time. Like, I used to really kind of beat myself up for not feeling the way that I thought I was supposed to feel about something, whether that was like excitement or mm-hmm. pride or like connection or like whatever. And yeah, so I obviously had a very emotional reaction to the episode, and it brought up a lot of like very relatable, painful memories of times that I've learned someone close to me that I loved had died. And I also totally understand why some people feel the way that they feel about like that there's a detachment happening, given the awfulness of the actions and beliefs of so many of the people that we're watching in this show. So yeah, I say feel how you feel, folks.
Yeah, totally. Feel how you feel, live and let live. I don't think there's a right way to watch a show, you know?
Yeah.
But I do think it's worth noting that people watch the show in very different ways, possibly even on this podcast.
I was also going to say, every time that you play a clip at the beginning of our chats, I'm usually laughing. Like, it is usually a very like funny or just like so mm-hmm. darkly satirical moment that it's like very amusing to me. And I think that's another thing about this show, where some people like really only see it as a comedy, or like really only see it as like that dark satirical vein. And some people see it as like a full tilt drama that just like has good jokes. And then I think I'm somewhere in the middle, where I think the point is that they are constantly towing a line between comedy and drama. And that can really affect how like emotional you get about something if you're mm-hmm. in that sort of whiplash of like, no, this is hilarious, and like we're poking fun at these people. Oh no, also here's this horrible tragic thing that just happened, and we're going to show it to you in the most like painstaking, gut-wrenching way with these incredible performances. So
yeah.
Well,
thanks for all the feedback at decodingtv.com. Of course, you can also email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. You know, there's one other thing I wanted to talk about before we get to this week's episode, Kim. And that is the state of online spoilerdom feels like in a great state of disarray online. So obviously we're spoiling everything through this week's episode of the show. But Nizar from DecodingTV.com writes, because few others could understand, let me post this here to my Decoding TV fam. About how I couldn't watch the episode live Sunday night and planned instead to watch Monday after a busy workday, only to have Vulture spoil the episode in their fucking headline mid-morning as it splashed across my Google News ticker. Seriously, I was fuming. I'm spoiler-averse, sure, and know how to avoid the obvious treacherous grounds online, but this one snuck by and grabbed me like a fucking Greg. The episode is masterful, but I hate that pathetic clickbait from Vulture of all places ruined this episode for me. End quote. I am extremely sympathetic to anyone who wanted to watch last week's episode with no spoilers and was spoiled by an errant headline.
Within less than 24 hours of the episode airing.
Within less than 24 hours. I mean, I do think that Nizar, if you're waiting 24 hours to watch the show, I do think like the danger increases proportionally the longer you wait. I think it is reasonable, personally, to expect that within the 24-hour time window, people aren't going to spoil stuff in headlines. But yeah, that is not the behavior we saw from major outlets. At 6:43 p.m. Pacific time, last Sunday night, before the episode had finished airing, before it had aired on HBO on West Coast, the Los Angeles Times tweeted out a fake obituary for Logan Roy. And it's like, cute obituary, great job spoiling it for everyone. And it just feels like the intense desire to be first is now the overriding factor. Yes, they could have published it even earlier, I guess, if they were complete dicks. But it is not cool. First of all, many, many outlets, Vanity Fair, Vulture, Uproxx, whatever, a lot of outlets were quite considerate. You know, Rolling Stone, they're like, wow, that big Succession development, that's completely fine, I think, right?
Yeah.
But
you have to write about it in some degree, and you have to like not fully clickbait people into an article, but also give some indication that like, yes, we're talking about that big thing that just happened in the episode, but
exactly. Yeah. But then to put it in the, put the spoiler in the headline, that's rough. I know for SEO purposes, a lot of people like they not put the spoiler in the headline, but they'll put it in the URL. And then it's like,
and the browser title, which I'm assuming is what people saw on Google News. I don't know if people know this, but like, Google News is often pulling in not the headline, but
this they have a different title as well, right? Exactly. Yeah. So, but suffice to say, the internet had no chill about that spoiler last week, and I actually wrote a post about it at my free newsletter, decodingeverything.com, where I was like, it really feels like we have crossed the Rubicon. Like you can't. It's not even just. It used to be you could just stay off Twitter or mute some words, and that would be okay. That's not enough anymore. Like, it needs to be complete media blackout. You need to like turn off your phone, not look at the internet at all, if you want to even have a chance of staying away from spoilers. It is just the world we live in. I don't like it. I don't like that this is the world we live in, but it is the world we live in now, and I think people need to be ready for it. For our, you know, from my perspective, like we always try to be extremely considerate when it comes to spoilers. We will spoil things, but we will tell you that we're about to spoil things, and we will never put spoilers in the headlines. Like I'm very conscious, Kim, when I'm putting up these posts at decodingtv.com. Mm-hmm. I always try to put the most generic image possible.
Yeah.
So that no one like looks at the image and is like spoil, like, because these go to people's email boxes.
Totally.
I'm always like trying not to choose an image that like will spoil anyone. But not everyone is as considerate as us, is kind of the point that I'm making. So.
Yeah. And I think that the unfortunate reality is these days, you have to gauge how popular the thing that you're watching in an episodic medium like this is, and like how important it is to you to not be spoiled. Because starting with season 6 of Game of Thrones, I would tell people like, dude, it's the Super Bowl every week. Like it's okay if you don't want to watch it and you can't watch it live, but you're going to wake up and see the score in the morning. Like everyone's going to be talking about it. So yeah, either you have to completely isolate yourself from the internet until you have time to watch it, or understand that there's a risk that something's going to get spoiled for you until you watch it, or if you don't watch it live.
Totally.
And yeah, that's a weird relationship to have with television that is unique to this day and age of internet and the weird binge culture versus appointment TV culture. And just no one seems to know what the etiquette is supposed to be anymore for the appropriate window of time.
It's just, it is fascinating. Like the thing that's interesting and kind of funny and sad about the story is that it was the LA Times that did it, you know?
Yeah.
All the kind of quote unquote digital native publications like Vulture, you know, I mean, Vulture also did it in the headline too. So they that was not cool either. But in general, a lot of the digital publications they know that people will be pissed and they are very considerate. It was the LA Times that kind of charged into this mess.
Yeah.
Really. And I think they were the first out with it in the headline on the tweet.
Yeah. The other thing I will say is, as someone who has been on the side of like publishing a story live that is supposed to like be timed to whether like an episode event or something, some people's, I don't know what any of the other people's content management systems look like, but like there are little things built into publishing tools that are like auto tweets or like whatever. Yeah. And like, it would not surprise me if the story behind that is that they set the story live, but accidentally like had the social media push go out at the same time.
Right.
And like,
that's still bad. That's still bad. You're still on Apple News, or you're still at the LA Times homepage, and you're seeing it. You know,
totally. I sympathize with social media managers.
Yeah. Let me say one last thing before people start writing in. Okay. I know people have different approaches to spoilers. Some people are like, well, I can't be spoiled because even if you give away the ending, I can still enjoy the work. yes, I get it. Good for you. Good job. Okay.
That's me. I truly don't mind spoilers, but I also know that that's a very personal, like, that's a me thing. So I would never assume that everybody else is the same.
It is a very personal thing.
Yeah.
And all we ask is that you give people the choice of whether or not they can be spoiled. But when you're putting shit in headlines, they no longer have that choice. So that's the point that I'm making. Okay. Yes. I'm not saying no one should ever be exposed to any spoil. You know, like, I'm just saying give people the choice.
Yeah.
I, David Chen, try to give people the choice in everything that I do.
Yeah.
And I hope that people have that courtesy too, but they don't. Okay. Let's get into the episode, Kim Renfro.
I feel better now. Do you feel better? Are you now really hyped up? Did we just excise some?
I'm fine. Here's the thing. The thing that's odd about it, Kim, I didn't even get spoiled on it, right? Like, I didn't get spoiled on the episode. But I feel angry on other people's behalf. Like,
totally.
That's how I feel. Like, I didn't get spoiled. Like, I watched it at 6:01 p.m. I was pressing play on Succession. So
yeah,
I watched it along with everyone else. But I'm sad that people's experience was, like, ruined. I also saw, like, it was funny to see the breadth of how people's experience would be ruined. Like, it was podcast episode title in the podcast app. You know, it was a Hollywood Reporter push notification. You know, like, all these various ways that people's experience gets ruined is a huge bummer to me.
Yeah.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But let's get into season 4, episode 4, Kim Renfro. Honeymoon States. Season 4, episode 4 of Succession. Honeymoon States. I was just talking last week about how some of the titles are mixed in terms of their success. Last week I thought was very good. Connor's Wedding. Very great. Subtle. Honeymoon States I also think is really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's referring to many things. The sarcastic comment from Willa about which states they're going to after their marriage, but potentially also people's state after the big dog is gone and the opportunity that that may create for some people.
Mm.
So season 4, episode 4, before we even talk about the show, I think there were a couple of pre-episode notes you wanted to mention, right, Kim?
I just wanted to flag that I was really excited when I saw Lorene Scafaria's name pop up as the director of this episode. She's one of my favorite working directors right now. She did Hustlers,
incredible movie. That was one of my top 10 movies of that year. Incredible.
Incredible and very, I think there's a little Venn diagram of, like, Hustlers and Succession in the way mm-hmm. that Lorene captures this, like, human aspect of these sort of headline stories that we hear about Wall Street bankers or about sex workers and, like, et cetera. And Hustlers just, like, really nailed that drama comedy tone perfectly, and I think that translates well into her work on Succession. So
I was also really excited to see her in this episode, and yeah, this episode mostly happens in one location, mostly in real time. It's the day after Logan's death. His family and many Waystar executives have gathered at his palatial apartment in New York to decide who will be the interim CEO. We visit each character, kind of see how they're processing Logan's death. And yeah, it feels like the episode takes place over the course of several hours. So let's start with overall thoughts on the episode, Kim Renfro. What do you think of this episode?
I thought it was a much needed, like, processing moment. I appreciated that they kind of just started us off the early morning hours of what I assume is the exact day after Logan died. And then, yeah, The fact that it's all in one location, the fact that it's taking place, like, mostly in real time, it was both exciting. Like, the pace was, I was, like, very kind of on the edge of my seat to see like where everyone's strategies was going to go. But I also thought it gave a lot of little breathing room moments that I really appreciated. I didn't cry. So take from that what you will.
I like this episode a lot. I mean, in the last episode of this podcast, we discussed how what we thought might be the end game of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this episode basically establishes that that's what we discuss is going to be the end game of the show. I want to start by saying I think that it is pretty clear to me from this episode, and we'll see if I'm right or not, but that all the kids are going to end up betraying each other, and it's all going to end terribly for them. Like, I know you had some wishes that they would be reunited and stay strong, but
I'm still clinging on.
I think there's, after this episode, there is no doubt in my mind that this will end with, like, come on, Kim. Like, this is the clearest the show has ever been in terms of foreshadowing, right? Like, their relationship is completely screwed, in my opinion. And it is telegraphed in a way that Logan's death was not telegraphed, in my opinion, right? Like, mm-hmm. Logan's death was like a complete surprise, but the show is basically saying, hey, we are setting these kids up to fail at, you know, loving each other. That's kind of what I feel. And so
yeah.
I do feel like we have clarity as to what the end game is. What I really liked about the episode is how it shows the variety of ways in which they're, you know, last episode we got to see the variety of ways in which people process like an emergency event.
Yeah.
Like Logan's death. And this episode we got to see the variety of different ways in which people process the aftermath of Logan's death, and
yeah,
each of the kids is handling it differently. And I think that feels very true to life. When someone dies in real life, it's not like all the family members, it doesn't hit them all the same way.
Totally.
And I like that you have that variety here. Of course, a lot of a handful of really amazing Succession moments as well. So overall, big fan of the episode. So here's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about some of the smaller side characters and their fates. And then we're going to talk about, obviously, the kind of big stuff that happens this episode. That involves Frank, Carl, and Jerry. Specifically, it involves, of course, the three Roy children. And then we'll end with our favorite quotes as usual. So let's talk about some of the side characters in this episode. First of all, I was shocked. Oh, actually, before we even get to the side characters, I want to mention, you know, I was thinking maybe we should have talked about this before, Kim Renfro. A lot of people were speculating that Shiv Roy was pregnant. And I was like, yeah, maybe we should talk about this on the podcast, but like, whatever. And of course, it turns out we find out at the beginning of this episode that Shiv Roy is pregnant. And many people saw this coming. I'm going to read from an article from Stylecaster. This is published on April 3rd. So by the time you're listening to this, like 2 weeks ago, someone at Sophie Hansen at Stylecaster published this article. And she writes, quote, "Is Shiv pregnant in Succession? We can't know for sure yet, but there have been some moments in season 4 that fans have been talking about. In episode 2, rehearsal, it's the night of Connor and Willa's rehearsal dinner ahead of the wedding they've been planning. The Roy siblings decide to go to karaoke to celebrate, but of course, a bit of Dutch courage is required. When the kids order drinks at a bar, Shiv jokes about ordering a house red, do I dare? Before sticking to a non-alcoholic club soda with a sealed lid, nothing from that tainted nozzle," end quote. Let's see. In the two-part season 3 finale, Shiv's mom, Caroline Collingwood, insinuated to her daughter that she'd be a bad mom, which leads her to go home and have spiteful sex with her husband. The next morning, the couple discuss their future fertility plans and what they do with Shiv's frozen eggs. When Tom betrays Shiv in the closing episode of season 3 by tipping Logan off, her hand trails down to her stomach, end quote. So those are a few kind of the signs that people have been talking about. Reddit has been speculating wildly that Shiv is pregnant. And this episode, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I saw on Reddit that someone was like, that's why Mondale didn't recognize her scent.
Yes,
I did not do any further scientific research into whether that's a real thing. But yes, mm-hmm. The Redditors are on the case. Anyways.
One of the things that's challenging about the show, I think, is the show doesn't do a very good job of explaining how much time has passed between things. And so it's unclear to me, like, whose child is my. My guess is it's. I don't think she's had sex with other people as far as we can tell.
Yeah.
So my guess is it's Tom's child.
They also the doctor on the phone says that her next appointment will be a 20-week scan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's not clear if she's like if this is 16 weeks. Like, is she still in the first trimester? Is she close to that 20-week scan, which means that she would be in her second trimester? Yeah, the timing, like, I have timing questions.
Yeah.
And I don't see a reason to believe that it's not Tom's baby. Right.
And narratively, it would be weird if it was just some other character we haven't met. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Especially because it seems to be a very specific charge behind all of her interactions that she has with Tom in this mm-hmm. episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that wouldn't make the way that she is engaging with Tom in this episode wouldn't make as much sense to me if she didn't think that it's his baby.
Hmm. Okay. I want to hear more about that when we get to that point. But but suffice to say, the internet called it, and we should have mentioned it here on the podcast. But it's also – I do want to just call out that I think my understanding – I read this online. I should have dug down to the actual source of this, but my understanding was that – the actor Sarah Snook is like she's pregnant right now, but also like the show would sometimes give her body image issues, if I recall correctly, and like she was trying not to like beat herself up to stay in shape during the show, you know, because she's like I just need to like put my health and my mental, you know, health first.
Yeah.
And so it's given that, you know, and I just assume any actor is going through something like that. I try not to comment on an actor's physical body. Appearance, you mm-hmm. know, because it's like that generally is not a good sign. Right. That being said, as people have pointed out, there have been other clues as well. So, but it's kind of why I try to stay away from that topic in general. I'm just pointing out. So
I was seeing it in her costuming. Like once mm-hmm. I kind of heard that theory, then I, like in Connor's wedding, I was like, oh, she's wearing these like suits with like dark layered clothing a lot mm-hmm. more often. Even in mm-hmm. the first episode, like she was in something much more like flowy and like suit like. And so I think that like it totally makes sense that the costuming is designed around like what Shiv might be feeling right now. And I think that makes a difference in her appearance because as we've talked about, her physical, her costuming, her hair, everything has shifted drastically over like season one. So I think anytime that Shiv is like testing out a somewhat newish look, I pay attention. And yeah, she's been in a lot of like turtlenecks, layered suits lately mm-hmm. In a way that make her like physical form less defined. Whereas if you go back to like season three, she was wearing a lot of like tightly fitted dresses. Mm-hmm. She mm-hmm. looks fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Sarah Snook is gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And yeah, I am right about that. I did a quick Google search and I am right about it. She has talked about that in the past as mm-hmm. like, you know, and so I don't want to, she has talked about body image issues in the past and I would never want anything we do on the podcast to like add to that.
Contribute to that, of course. So, yeah.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Marsha and Carrie. I was shocked, Kim Renfro, to see Hi, I'm a Boss in the opening credits of this episode. And I was like,
she's
oh my
back.
Gosh, Marsha's back? What? Anyway, beginning of the episode, Kendall is shocked to see her. And he has this quote where he says, he's trying to ask her, he's like, where have you, when, you know, he, like the end of the sentence is going to be, where have you been? Or, you know, what's been going on? But,
yeah.
He said, you know, instead he's like, what, when did you get in? And she says that, she's had daily intimate calls with Logan and that they spoke like every day and every night and it's complicated, but they were very intimate conversations. So yeah, later on there's a scene where Carrie comes in, she's completely distraught and she wants to see her stuff. And she wants to get her stuff or wants to see Logan's room and Marsha forbids it and hands her all of her stuff in a bag and coldly tells her that she can go back to her little apartment and mourn there instead. Roman tries to help Carrie in a way that I think is a little bit foreshadowing. We could talk about that. But yeah, Marcia's back. And I'm just curious what you thought about Marcia's return and her dynamic with the other characters this episode.
I was very happy to see her back. I think that it would have been a waste if her character truly just like faded away in the manner that she had. So yeah, very stoked that she's actually being a considered player in the game once again of like who wins all the money and power. Right away, I was skeptical of the way that she was talking to Kendall. Like it just totally rang to me of like, I'm making sure I tell everyone as quickly as possible that me and Logan spoke every day in case anyone wants to doubt like the status of our marriage. Cause it seems we've talked about this before, but they seem to have come to a mutual agreement to like remain married and then, but like live their lives separately. And Marcia gets as much money and vacations and shopping as she wants. So yeah, flags immediately went up and then they just stayed up and maybe more kept adding to them as the episode went on, because I'm like, of course I understand not wanting to like comfort your husband's mistress right after he died. But also Marcia, you like clearly are also in a transactional relationship, or you were in a transactional relationship with Logan. So like, do you need to be that cruel to a person who's just like clearly freaking out?
Yeah, I think Marcia's interactions with others have been really interesting, because I think she doesn't – what's interesting is the level of self-delusion. She doesn't see herself that way. There's this moment where she talks to Willa and she says, look how far you've come. And then Willa says, look how far we've both come, you know. But that's not the way Marcia frames it, you know. Mm-hmm. She doesn't say, look how far we've both come, because she sees herself as like different than the other people that Logan has been with. And I do think it's a window into self-delusion. Also – kind of a whole Solomon cutting the baby in half moment, you know? Mm. Are you familiar with the story of Solomon, right?
I believe so, but remind me.
Okay, so in the Bible, Solomon is this wise king, and these two, you know, these two women are like, hey, this kid's mine, and Solomon needs to adjudicate. So he says, we'll cut the baby in half, and we'll give half of it to you, and we'll give half of it to the other woman. And then one of the women says, no, please, like the other woman can have the baby, you know, or the child. And Solomon
and that's
says,
the true mother.
That's the true mother, because she would not want something terrible to happen to the child.
Right.
And why am I bringing that up? Not a perfect analogy, but I think
who's the baby?
There's no baby here. But the reason I bring it up is because between Carrie and Marcia, who is the more upset about Logan's death? I don't even think Marcia cries during this whole episode. Carrie is completely distraught, right?
Yeah.
So it's clear that even though Marcia has the power, Carrie is the one that really had the relationship with Logan, at least at this stage in his life.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I think I saw a lot of like speculation after last week's episode about like, was Carrie actually with Logan when he died? Were they like having sex in the bathroom? Like, is she carrying some sort of like guilt of responsibility for his death? Is she like doing a weird performative grief thing for the sake of power? But I think that this scene made me believe that she truly just is still in shock and had deluded herself. Again, a window of self-delusion, deluded herself into thinking that she was a more important person to Logan than she really was at the end of the day. And she's like having trouble accepting that like without him, she has no access or power in this situation anymore.
There are a few things to that theory I would just want to mention. You know, my co-host on the Filmcast brought up this theory of maybe Carrie and Logan were having sex when he died. And the reason that theory makes the most sense for some things is that Carrie looked so weird and shocked and shaken when he died. Like, it would make sense for someone who was having sex with someone who died to have that reaction, right? Because she was acting so weird in the episode. I don't think it makes sense. For a couple now, like, looking back on it, I don't think it makes sense for a couple reasons. First of all, Logan has a bedroom in the plane, and so he's not.
Yeah, why would they be in the?
He
bathroom?
Doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would want to. Logan doesn't seem like the bathroom sex kind of guy, especially if there's a bedroom right there. So let's just start with that. Second thing is the details that Tom provides in this episode about Logan's end state do seem to indicate that he had really intimate knowledge of what Logan was doing when he died. Fishing a phone out of a clogged toilet is the words that he used, I believe. So I don't think Tom would just make up that detail. But on the pro carry side, you know, Logan apparently wasn't wearing his compression socks to try to impress Kerry. So it's like, maybe that, like that theoretically could have created some problems for him. I know as somebody who has had a blood clot in my arm in the last couple of years,
scary.
The compression is important.
Yeah.
And so it is interesting that like by trying to impress Kerry, because compression socks, let me just put this out there. They're not attractive, right? When you see someone wearing compression socks, most people are not turned on. And so when you're wearing them, if he's not wearing them, he's trying to impress Kerry, and maybe that led to his death. That would be like a really kind of tragic ending for that character.
I think. So, and you know what? This probably has nothing to do with anything, but I will note that at the end of episode 2, when we saw Logan flashing some ankle to Rome, I was like, absolutely not. I don't need that much leg from Logan Roy. And so if he was trying to ditch those compression socks for Kerry, no, I did not like that.
Wow. This is like the third time Kim has gone against Logan's ankles.
It just, you know, like,
it's really...
It felt like a very Victorian like power move of like, I'm so relaxed in my luxurious home. Look at me in my slippers and my robe, like vibe that I, yeah. And also, thank you for bringing up that there was a bedroom in that plane, because I don't think I talked about that last episode. And like, that was something where I was genuinely like, I keep forgetting how rich people live. Like, I'm sorry, there is a full, what looks like a minimum queen size
bed.
Minimum and queen, I just did a like 11 hour flight recently, and I looked up the price for one of those like little baby lay down beds. $11,000 they wanted me to pay to lay down on a tiny bed on a plane for 11 hours. And Logan Roy just has a full bedroom where he can, yeah, have sex, take a nap, do whatever he wants on his way to Sweden.
Indeed. All right. There's some Tom and Greg material here in this episode. Mostly Tom trying to ingratiate himself with literally every single character that's left, because he knows he's in a terrible situation. I love the interaction between all the Waystar Royco executives, where they're looking at the China, and Tom tries to throw his hat in the ring to be the next CEO. He's like, "Hey, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring, you know, just to, as a, I'm ready
just
to be
mentioning
a service." Yeah. You ever see the John Wick movies, Kim Renfro?
Uh-huh.
There is a line that they say to kind of the high table elders or whatever. It is, "I will serve. I will be of service." That's kind of the line they say before they go and kill a bunch of people. It felt like Tom was trying to ingratiate himself with the high table by saying, you know,
I will serve.
I will be of service. I'll wherever you want me to be.
I'm here to serve. It's so, yeah.
That is the only resemblance that Tom has to anyone in John Wick. But there is a great line where all these executives are gathered and they're all like sniping at each other. Loved all the sniping, you know. Literally everything they say is
barb,
you know. Jerry's saying, "Hey, Carl, I have so much respect for you. What you did with Cable in the 90s, it was legendary." You know, it's like the
so
most
good.
Backhanded compliment you can have of like, "You're fucking old, man." But Carl's, you know, does the coup de grace, right? He says to Tom, "Hey, Tom, if you were to be CEO, I'm just going to say this as a friend, okay? Like, here's what someone might say. Quote, the negative case would be that you're a clumsy interloper and no one trusts you. The only guy pulling for you is dead. And now you're just married to the ex-boss's daughter and she doesn't even like you. And you are fair and squarely fucked." End quote. And that seems to overwhelm Tom with that. He's like, "Jesus Christ." You know,
Tom cannot process when people actually just directly tell him the reality of his state. Like, Logan told him, well, not to his face, but he was standing right there. Like, he was standing there when Logan told Shiv, "You are marrying a man
fathoms
beneath you.
Yeah.
Because you know he won't betray you." Or, like, come on, Tom. He can't he can't accept it. He keeps fighting.
What's great about it is that the show has demonstrated to us many times that Tom is incompetent.
You know, yeah.
And he is not an inspiring leader. He doesn't have any discernible skills. He is merely there because of his familial relationships. And so everything Carl says is true.
Yeah.
And it is true to that character. So Tom tries to say to Kendall, hey, all that stuff I said about Logan being never being fucked and you being fucked all the time, you know, let's water under the bridge. Kendall says, I like you. Remember I gave that whole
speech.
Nailed
that. Nailed it.
A few episodes ago, I talked about how I like you is code in Succession. And Kendall says, I like you. Good luck. And so it's code for basically, I'm trying to emotionally disarm you, but I see you as beneath me, right? That is what I like you is.
I think I loved that so much in this episode too, because, and I know we might get to it more specifically later, but like the way that the siblings specifically talk about coded language used to describe Logan in all of his obituaries.
Yeah.
And then throughout the episode, we see so many codes that aren't translated directly for us, but we can pretty much infer, and you already did that with the, I like you, good luck, is like the, it's the bless your heart of Succession kind of thing.
The higher you get up into the corporate world, the more esoteric the code words become, you know, and mm-hmm. the more indiscernible from reality it is. But a really neat key for translating it is something my wife said is, these people are so rich that they cannot be told no. So instead they just get a bunch of word salad and then they need to then figure out that they just were told the answer no. One good example of that would be Carrie in last episode, where she's like, oh, do you want me to work on the statement with you? No one says no, but they're saying no. They're saying, hey, go back there and rest your head and da da da, and we'll come get you. You know, so the answer is no, but no one says no. No one says no at this level.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, it's a big watch what they do, not what they say world.
There is a scene where Tom goes to Shiv and tries to reconnect with her. He kind of tries to reconnect with each of the Roy children, right? He's like,
yeah.
Says to Kendall, water under the bridge. He says to Roman, hey, Roman, you're the one that should be in charge. And I would back you.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to Shiv, he tries to remind her of some nice times they spent together. Yes, Tom is a ladder climbing lamprey on the barnacle on the base of the Waystar Royco ship, but I actually think he was being genuine in the conversation with Shiv. Like, I know people disagreed with me last week on the podcast as well, but I thought Tom was actually, it is possible for people to be genuinely nice, even though they are bad people overall, you know?
Yeah.
People aren't just one thing is kind of the point. And I think that's what Succession shows over and over again.
Yeah. So, or at the very least, maybe if it's not like genuine kindness, it's definitely earnest. It's like earnest communication, which mm-hmm. not a lot of the characters do. Like he is genuinely trying to like connect with her about something and to try and to like, he's, I think, trying to make her feel better, but as we've just said, Tom's incompetent at many things, including comforting Shiv in the way that she would prefer to be comforted in this moment. You know, like she doesn't want to get gooey eyes from her husband that she's separated from and potentially pregnant with his baby with, a pregnancy that she does not seem excited about, we should note. Like a lot of her physical cues towards him are not signaling like, oh, maybe part of me's happy that I'm pregnant. It's very much like, do not touch me. Don't be nice to me right now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want that side of you. So yeah, it's just, that was painful. And also just Matthew McFadden. I don't know, how many times have you seen Pride and Prejudice directed by Joe Wright featuring Keira Knightley and Matthew McFadden?
0.3.
You should watch that movie, although you will never be able to look at Tom Wamsgams the same. But sometimes he turns on what I call the Mr. Darcy eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like he knows how to make his face look like, I am so in love with you and I'm just trying to be nice to you and can't we remember the good times? Like he's very good at that. And I think that that's what people pick up on when they see that sort of like kindness coming out of Tom. It's like he's turning on some sort of charm juice that works.
What do you think Shiv is feeling at the time? Because I think she can't let go of the betrayal, right? She can't let go of the fact that Tom has betrayed her.
Yeah.
And once that created a rift in their relationship, you know, things start to spiral even further, basically. So,
yeah. I also just think Shiv has always had a very complicated relationship with her mother and with the idea of motherhood.
Mm-hmm,
yeah. She's the only woman in this nuclear family system, really. Yeah. And so I think that she's, to me, everything that I was getting out of Sarah Snook's performance in this episode was like that very complicated relationship that some women have with the idea that you are supposed to feel a certain way about getting pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Or that, again, back to the shoulds, like the way that like the doctor's tone is like, this is all happy news and like whatever, kind of like transcripting that like, oh, we're having an exciting conversation about your pregnancy. That's not how all women feel when they're pregnant in the first trimester.
Sure, sure. To be fair, like, her dad also just died, you know, and I think there was some awkwardness there as well. But
totally.
Yes,
I think that it's all wrapped up in like her inability to express emotions or find someone to actually talk to about in this moment. She doesn't talk to her brothers. And again, to your point of like this episode's transcripting how they're going to break apart, like the fact that she's holding this massive secret on a day when she has a lot of people around her who are saying like, I love you, I want to stick together, let's talk to each other. But like, she's really having trouble making herself vulnerable any further than she already is.
Well, that's the Tom and Greg stuff. You know, Greg is a dope this episode and tries to... I do think this is the show saying... There's a moment when Greg says, oh, Logan wrote my name down, so that means I'm supposed to be the number two, you know? And Frank started cackling like uncontrollably. And
yeah,
I do wonder if that's the show definitively taking Greg off the table as a possible successor, or if it's saying... Wow, wouldn't it be funny if he did, you know, was the successor, because no one would have seen it coming. I do think that it's very unlikely that Greg would be the successor. It's possible that, you know, what is a possibility is Waystar Royko, the deal like doesn't complete next episode. Waystar Royko shatters into like 18 pieces. And Greg is in charge of one of them. Like that's a possibility, I think.
Sure. Parks.
But it's hard. Yeah, but it's hard for me to, that's right. But it's hard for me to imagine him being number one on top of whatever final Waystar Royko Gojo entity will result. Like that just doesn't seem in the realm of possibility right now.
Yeah, I'm losing confidence in in my cousin Greg theory with every week, because he really is not doing a good job of navigating any of the situations that he's found himself in.
To be fair, it's not like, I don't think it was a super serious theory that we had. It was just,
no,
it would be a very fun, chaotic choice for the show to make, I think is kind of what we would
And
say,
I think,
right?
maybe theory is too strong of a word, but like I genuinely saw a path there.
Yes.
I was like, depending on what happens in
Certainly.
The season, I could
Certainly.
See a path. And I think that at this point, I'm not seeing that path, because... As you're saying, there are now in-universe people who are like very much losing the Greg confidence, including Tom, right? Like their relationship is very fractious right now. And if Greg was ever going to be able to continue ascending, he needs at least one ally. And now he's clinging to Marcia. So it's like, we'll see how that goes.
I did want to call out the Frank, Carl, Jerry interactions. It's really fun to see them interact in a context that's not with any of the Roys.
Yeah.
I think we saw a little bit of that in season two, maybe, but we get a rare glimpse of what their interactions are like. And that was delightful. We mentioned the scene earlier with Carl laying it out for Tom, how terrible of a situation he's in. But I did think that there was a telling moment when Carl was saying how, hey, maybe we say that the existing Roy kids are... dot, dot, dot. And then Tom says dipshits and fuck ups or screw ups, you know, like Tom chimes in with the thing. And because even Carl is not going to speak ill of any of the children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Tom is willing to. Yeah.
That was another one of my favorite, like, corporate speaks or whatever, maybe not constitutionally well equipped at this point to take on the role.
Yes.
What a way to say they're all dipshits and screw-ups.
Yeah. But they discover a cryptic document that Logan has left behind in his safe, where he seems to have made some notes of his wishes, but he didn't tell his lawyer about it, and so it's unclear what he actually wanted. The scene when Frank and Carl discover the note is really amazing. Again, every sentence they are speaking is some kind of code in that situation, where Carl says, how long have you had this, and Frank says, I haven't been able to even start thinking about it until you were here. You know, like,
I didn't even want to think about it until you were thinking about it.
Right, exactly. Because it's not like there's no situation where my involvement in this predated your involvement in this. And I love how it's like, well, what if it just got lost? I'm joking, of course.
You're speculating in a humorous mode,
and he's like, in a comedic vein, you know, like,
because, and then in the future on a witness stand, someone could say, oh, that was just a joke.
Yes.
Like,
oh, I was just
he said it in a joking tone.
In a comic vein. Yeah.
we actually told each other right then that we were talking in a comic mode.
Yeah. And I think Jerry says something like, yeah, well, that's a very funny joke, you know, like, and they all know the things they need to say for it to be legally, not unimpeachable, but certainly legally complicated. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I think I have three episodes of Succession out of the four where I've learned a new vocabulary word. And today it was germane, because I wanted to make sure I knew what that meant, because I think Jerry's usually very right about things. And so, yeah. The fact that it means it's not relevant or appropriate, I was like, okay, yeah, that's a solid word for that piece of paper. It's just vague enough of a word to bring in doubt. And then you bring the kids in and all hell really breaks loose.
You do get a sense of, again, I referenced this last week, but how difficult these people's lives are, you know, how annoying their lives have to be to work for these kids who are brats. These people have their own wants and needs too, Kim. Carl is like going in on a Greek island or something with his half brother or something along those lines. They have wants of tens of millions of dollars. They have needs. You know, they're debating who should be the CEO, and Carl's like, it should be me. You know, he needs that golden parachute. So it's just interesting to get a glimpse into their life. And there is a moment when Carl says, like, I'm not going to have these princes ruin this situation for me. Which I thought was very telling. All right. But let's talk about the three kids. Let's talk about the main event of the episode. We already talked about Shiv getting pregnant. We follow Kendall as he arrives to Logan's mansion across from the Metropolitan Museum of Art in the Upper East Side. Love a good Kendall walking into a building looking sullen with sunglasses on scene.
While getting photographed by...
Yeah, the show has had many of them, and he always looks like he's very tortured, and he did a great job. Kendall walks past Hugo, who's on the phone, saying, you know you fucked me. What you've done, Juliet, is you've taken a strap on and fucked me in the ass, right? Call me, please. End quote. I wonder what that's all about. Later, we find out that Hugo's daughter has engaged in insider trading. And I actually really appreciated that interaction where Kendall asks Hugo, like, you know, what are the phone records going to show? He already knows, like, what is going to happen, right? And this is a very serious, the insider trading is very serious. You can get in big trouble for it. I think I might have shared, I don't know if I shared with you, I talked about it in last season of Succession, but when I was at Microsoft, one of the training videos they played was this guy who got in trouble for insider trading. And he actually went back to Microsoft and did a training video and was basically like, I sold some stock before I was supposed to, or I bought some stock before I was supposed to, and I had to go to jail for some number of years, and it completely ruined my life. Don't buy and sell stock based on information that you know, like, and it was very vivid and frightening. It's like,
yeah,
don't ever do that. It can ruin your life will be completely different. So
yeah, that is, the conversation where Hugo reveals that to Kendall was so good and really telegraphed a lot in terms of Kendall remembering that sense of power that he can have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like,
you're talking about the last conversation or the middle of the episode conversation?
The middle of the episode conversation, yeah. When Hugo first confides in Kendall as if hey, I just need some help sorting this out. And the way that Kendall snaps into I know exactly what to do here. I know what not to say to this idiot, slips that little thing into his pocket.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it comes right back around at the end of the episode and you're like, woof. Okay. There he goes.
Kendall also saying, hey, what are the phone records going to show? Did you make a call to your daughter? And he's like, I don't recollect.
Yeah.
Which is, great. Great covering your ass.
I just served on a jury last year.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated by how many people got up on that witness stand and just said, I don't remember that 3-hour meeting at all. Mm-hmm. I don't remember anything about it. And I was it's so obviously I just don't remember.
It is the safest thing to say.
Yeah.
Because no one can prove whether you remember or not. So it's it's giving no information and it's completely legally defensible thing.
Yeah.
To say. So
yeah.
If you're ever on the witness stand and you or your family member might get in trouble, the words to say are, I don't have any recollection. All right. Unless, of course, that's a lie, in which case don't perjure yourself. I am not a lawyer. This podcast does not constitute legal advice. The kids do a lot of bonding. You referenced a scene earlier where they read from the newspaper and they talk about what the newspaper says versus what it really means. That's very, very funny. There's a few scenes like that. Connor offers Marcia $63 million to buy Logan's house because he wants to save on real estate broker fees and because it's hard to get in on these buildings. Mattson calls Roman. They try to get their ducks in a row. They call back, but Mattson doesn't answer. It's kind of embarrassing. It's a tough phone call. You know, there's a whole politics over who is waiting for who on the phone.
I know.
When the president calls, it's not the president calling. It's their person. And they say, hey, right. It's the president on the phone. Are you ready? Please hold for the president. The president does not hold, right?
Yeah.
So who is holding is the person who has less power in the situation.
Yeah.
And so for them to kind of be fumbling around trying to get Mattson on the phone is very, very undignified.
But I did like that Roman didn't just answer the call. I like the little, it's becoming a little routine of the siblings where they do the take five, we do 5 minutes. And I'm they're getting together again. They're collaborating. I mean,
you say that, Kim, but that's what led to this being a fucked situation. So I think
that's true.
I think it's what that dynamic is showing is that they are not a functional, that is not a functional arrangement. And I think we already start to see it fracture by the end of the episode,
I think it's not a functional arrangement.
But yes, it's cute. But it's cute. It's cute.
I think it's not a functional arrangement when they're actually trying to do business together. But again, mm-hmm. me over here in the feelings corner, I'm always thinking about when are the times that they're actually choosing to mm-hmm. work together or to try to work together instead of doing what they've typically done, which is go silo themselves off. And unfortunately, yes, by the end of the episode, they each seem siloed again.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a bummer, but I love this scene because it showed a little bonding. We got some solid sibling bonding moments. And I loved Roman's thing, them going through how do you all feel? And Kendall kind of being floating therapy very gently to everyone. I had a talk. It actually really helps. For the record,
I think I speak for both Kim and myself when I say, therapy is a very, if you can afford it, it's a very meaningful experience, and don't let anyone on Succession talk you out of it.
No.
So,
and also don't think that you're going to get Kendall's 1 a.m. probably $2,000 an hour grief expert.
Yeah.
But yes, I have found therapy incredibly helpful, and especially with things like grief, I think it's very easy to just not verbalize what you're going through. And to me, the best thing to do is to just talk about it with at least someone, whether it's a therapist or a friend or a person. But yeah, thoughts have a way of metastasizing when you just leave them inside your head as opposed to just getting it out.
But I think none of this, this is both a dynamic of these siblings, but also a dynamic of people in power that I think there is the perception that therapy conveys some kind of weakness.
Yeah.
And that's why they can't treat it seriously explicitly.
Yeah.
This is also why Tony Soprano seeing therapy was such a big deal, you know, when that was a thing, is like the idea of a mafia boss, you know, needing this thing that conveys weakness was seen as very upsetting to many people, you know, in both the worlds. So, yeah. Okay. So the big thing that happens is they go and they discover this. Jerry, Carl, and Frank decide they're going to reveal this information to the siblings. They're not going to try to hide it or flush it down the toilet. They're going to actually tell them. I think it seems to me the calculation is made because legally it's not really enforceable, and also the family doesn't have majority board control anymore. You know, so it's like it wouldn't necessarily impact them that much anyway. That being said, it does clearly have some impact on the events.
I also wonder if they knew that it would divide the siblings.
Mm.
They were definitely very wary of having all three of them
against
being
the Gojo deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here is the big question, Kim Renfro, is do you think Logan was trying to underline Kendall Roy, or was he trying to cross out Kendall Roy? They show a close-up of the piece of the document at the end of the episode.
I have.
And it is really well done, because it is done in such a way that is very ambiguous. And the pen stroke clearly starts as an underline, and then by the end of the word Roy, it is a cross out. It is like through the word Roy, like middle of the word Roy. And I am curious if you have an opinion on whether it was an underline or a cross out.
I'm leaning towards underline.
Mm.
Given where it starts and the fact that it's not like he didn't cross it out and write something else.
Yeah.
And if the point was to like convey a decision, but I don't know. I agree. It is so perfectly done.
Yeah.
In that
it's really well done.
I can't tell, but I don't know.
Well, Kim, I'm going to be a raging asshole and tell you what my opinion is, which is to say you're not supposed to be able to tell. And also, that is the point of the episode.
Yeah.
In the sense that this episode is about trying to make sense of someone's wishes who didn't convey them in any clear form, and how chaotic and ambiguous and unsettling that whole process is. And am I making the right choice? And am I making the right decision? And is that what they would have wanted? And trying to live with that. So the uncertainty is a feature, not a bug. I know that's not a revelatory observation, but yeah, it's a fun mental exercise to try to think, like, what did he really think?
Yeah.
Okay, putting aside the completely asshole-ish response, I do think, because I was the one that set you up for the question in the first place, I lean towards underline as well, just because of where it started, you know? If I was
trying to cross out my heir's name.
Yeah. If it was like a millimeter higher in terms of where that pen stroke started, I would feel maybe different. But it starts out as an underline, and maybe, you know, yeah, but it's tough, man. It's tough.
Props to the props department.
Yeah.
whoever did that repeatedly on copies of this paper until it looked perfectly ambiguous.
Indeed.
Way to go.
There's a few other things that happen in the episode. We see a Steven Root's character gives a speech about Logan Roy, which Connor says is inaccurate, but whatever. Jared Mencken shows up. They have bomb-sniffing dogs show up at the apartment. And so that does seem to indicate Jared Mencken will be a major storyline this episode.
Also, Mark Ravenhead, the ATN host guy who Tom completely failed to properly vet back in season two, he was there too. So, like,
oh, nice.
They were absolutely seeding in, like, the Roys are very much still cozied up to the Republican nominees and this like ultra right agenda that's happening in the election that's pending.
One observation I wanted to make is I think it is very significant that Roman is the one who is driving making nice with all of Roman's, I'm sorry, all of Logan's previous people. So he is very he's uncharacteristically compassionate to Carrie.
Yeah.
That was just weird. I was like, I've never seen Roman be this nice to someone. That's weird. Like, I was like, is this going to be some joke where he makes fun of her? But nope, that didn't happen. And then he's also he says to the people, hey, Jared was Logan's friend. Like, let's welcome Jared. He's driving that as well. I think the show is trying to say something about how Roman is staying on very good terms with a lot of Logan's old relations.
Yeah.
And I do think that will come into play later on.
And he was like, he's right to say that he was inside on the Mattson deal.
Yeah.
Far more than the other siblings. And he has a better rapport.
He'll probably take the lead on it. So,
yeah.
What else happens this episode?
Oh, also Roman's little, I love the exchange between Roman and Jerry, when they bring up like, oh, everyone knows Logan was souring on Jerry. And she says, well, I don't think there's any paperwork to that effect. And Roman gives her just enough of a look.
He's like, And then she says, not that I would even push the matter, you know, and it's.
She immediately backs down. Yeah, and that was like such a good payoff to like their rapport, which is like, she knows Roman wouldn't make that face at her for no reason.
Right.
Like if he was the one who had that conversation,
he has the emails from Logan saying, you know, get rid of
Jared. He has the logistics folder copy somewhere that Tom alluded to last episode.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the end of the day, they decide to make Kendall and Roman CEOs. You know, Kendall makes a play for Stewie as well, and Stewie agrees to sign on. Kendall manages to convince everyone that he is for the Gojo deal. That is significant because mere episodes ago, I don't think that was true.
Yeah. Right?
I don't think it was true that he was for the Gojo deal. So I am curious, like, what kind of game is Kendall playing at right now, right? What is he trying to achieve? He is now in charge. But to do what? Because two episodes ago, he was trying to sabotage the deal.
Right.
That was my understanding of episode two. So,
yeah, I think it was. But it also, even in that episode, that decision was confusing. That decision wasn't entirely.
It was not fully explained.
Fully explained. And so.
I put out a theory for it, but, you know, like, I don't think it's been clarified in the show at all. So.
No. And I think that's why I'm having a hard time telling if. Like, when Kendall was talking to Stewie, I did kind of feel like that was him being his most
genuine,
like, upfront about what he was feeling and why he was doing that. Because, like, I was happy that we saw so many people respond to Kendall being like, what do you mean you want to be CEO, dude? Like, so close to getting out, and that's what you've been wanting
for so
long.
This is the biggest excuse he could ever have to get out.
Yeah.
Right? So what is his end game? I'm really curious.
It feels to me like a little bit of a backslide of him. He's grieving, as all of the siblings are, and for whatever reason, in this moment, the discomfort of actually having to go do his own thing and try something new and like break out of this cycle. That's a crappy part of healing is when you hit that point of discomfort where, oh, now all the things that you're doing that are better for you, maybe in the long run, are actually unfamiliar to you and to your nervous system or to your brain. And so like, there are times I've experienced this with like depression and stuff. Like there are times where like, it feels more comfortable and safe to stay in the sort of like holding pattern cycle, even if you know that it's not the best thing for you. And I think that it felt to me like that's what Kendall is going through in this episode, where it's like he's unmoored. He thought that he was getting out. He thought that he was like had no more relationship with his father. And then his father dies and he's thrown right back into like, oh God, what is my dad's legacy? Am I living up to my dad's legacy? Am I the best version of the man my father raised me to be type of thing? And he just like slips right back into his like season one Kendall mode of like, oh, I know how to be a ruthless business killer like my dad. So I'm going to go do that for a little bit of time here. And I don't think that's good for him.
That's very plausible, Kim. Alternate theory.
Yeah.
Alternate theory. He wants to dismantle his father's legacy.
Right. Like, it's a vindictive, like, it's a vengeance thing.
Yeah, he wants to lay waste to Waystar Royco, run it in the worst way possible, run it with an iron fist that kind of completely destroys the company, to get back at his father for making him feel so terrible. That's also a possibility, I have to say.
No, so, I agree with you. And I think that, again, it's something that I really admire about Jeremy Strong's performance of Kendall Roy, is that he very convincingly swings you through, like, that he, there's an unpredictability to his mood at all times, mm-hmm. where, like, you aren't sure if he's in a place of, like, oh, I'm trying to get better and I want to be a good guy and I don't want to be like my dad, or I'm going to do what my dad would have done, but just to his reputation. And, like, that's literally what he says to Hugo, right? Is, like, it's what my dad would have done. Go burn it. Like, go burn his legacy.
Right. Yeah. But anyway, we'll see how it plays out. At the end of the episode, Kendall is able to convince everyone that he wants to see the Gojo deal through, right? And so, as a result, he and his siblings have a chat. They talk about what they should do. Very critical scene where Kendall says, hey, I think it should be me. And Roman says, it can't be just you. You've tried to kill Dad so many times. And also, I'm beyond, you know, next to Gojo deal. I'm okay with it being us being co-CEOs. Shiv's like, what about me? Shiv says, what about me? And they say, oh yeah, well, don't worry, it's gonna be totally a threesome situation. Everyone will have equal power, but we're just gonna be the front, so it doesn't look weird, because it'd be weird for someone who has had a very limited role at Waystar Royco to just suddenly be at the top. So I think the line is something like, two people is fucking, three people is a weird orgy hipster like hippie thing.
Yeah.
And so so they convince Shiv, hey, back down, back us. And yeah. It's going to be okay. And, you know, she says, hey, okay, like, you're swearing on our dad's death that this is a thing. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to fuck you over. I'm going to just fast forward to the end of this season. I have a feeling she was going to get fucked over by the end, Kim. It is the most clear that Succession has ever been about, hey, they're saying a thing, and that the thing that they are trying to avoid is definitely going to happen. I think there's no doubt that Shiv is going to get completely fucked over by the end of the show. I'm curious how.
Yeah.
But do you disagree?
I just don't even know. I can't. I think that the surprising structure that they've given to this final season by having Logan die so early.
Yeah.
And the way that they are doing such a good job of showing, like, the unpredictable roller coastery emotion of grief and, like, power vacuums and all that stuff is, like, I'm having a hard time feeling certain about where I think they're going with anything, but it definitely doesn't feel good. And I think that Shiv being the one person who was really against the Mencken nomination in the first mm-hmm. place, very against wanting to be in that family photo that she did eventually get into, like, I do feel like that's the open-ended conflict with her and her arc and her family. And yes, they seem to be setting her back up as a black sheep once again, who, like, mm-hmm. doesn't have a clear role within this inner circle anymore. She's really struggling. So it's like, what's her play? And I'm not sure that sticking with her brothers is going to pay off positively for her.
Yeah, I'd be willing to bet.
But I want them to. I still really want everyone to be nice and friends at the end of this.
I'm willing to bet you a deluxe Arby's meal that it does not go well for Shiv Roy by the end of this. So
how about a house red at a dive bar?
Yeah. Sounds good. And by just Kim, not the whole listenership. That would be too many. That'd be too many people. So there is a scene where Carolina and Hugo talk Kendall and Roman through the options. Option one is, hey, we're just continuing on Logan's legacy. Option two, we torch Logan's legacy. We say, hey, he was basically incompetent at the end. It was the kids who were running things. That would strengthen their position. Initially, they are resistant to it. Roman in particular says it's very disgusting and please never bring anything like that to them again. But Kendall, after further thought, realizes, hey, this is how we should do it. It's what Dad would have wanted. It's how Dad would have handled things, you know, which I actually think is very true. And then threatens Hugo and says, hey, Hugo, you're going to do this without any authorization, with no paper trail. You're going to just float this out there. And if you don't, Kendall intimates that he will get Hugo into trouble for his insider trading admission from earlier. The episode ends with Kendall flashing a smile. And I have to say, this is the creepiest smile that Kendall has ever given on this show. And I thought it was an amazing way to end the episode, because we have rarely seen Kendall Roy smile at all in the show. And when he does smile, he's kind of joking. He's often insecure. He's often like, hey, I'm trying to make Lawrence from Volter like me. You know, I'm joking around. Or he's joking with his siblings. He's making fun of his siblings.
Yeah.
This is the first time when I've seen Kendall smile in an assured way, in a way that is commensurate with the power that he has. Mm. And it felt like I was watching a true villain being born. Mm. Not just someone with the power, but with the will to destroy people's lives to achieve his own ends. And I thought it was a really chilling way to end the episode. What did you think of the ending of this week's episode of Succession?
They've been ending on Kendall a lot.
Yeah.
They ended on him. The final shot of him in last week's episode was also...
Yeah, very powerful.
Very powerful. And I think that if you compare that moment, him standing in the moonlight on the tarmac watching his dad's body drive away, to standing alone by himself inside his dead father's house, having just successfully gotten himself...
He's not alone. Like, he's across from Hugo at that point, but...
Sure, but like just like he's like the only one in the frame.
He's the only one in the show. Type of
vibe. And so I completely agree with you, spot on, about it being chilling in a way that is like discomforting because of how infrequently we've seen Kendall in that kind of position. And I'm just so worried for all of them.
Maybe this whole thing is Breaking Bad with like Kendall being the center. It's like, maybe that's what the arc of the show is going to be, is about how Kendall went from kind of ineffectual to
dominating,
but also like kind of pretty, if not evil, then at the very least amoral.
Right. Like, you know, Logan has fully stripped him of his ability to connect with his emotions.
Any humanity left, right? Like, maybe that will be the ultimate arc. When he flashed that smile, I felt like maybe that's the ultimate arc of the show. I don't know.
I also think no one has really brought up his addiction in a while. Like, this whole season, I think, no one has said anything about it. Whereas it was pretty notable when everyone started saying once again, like, oh, he's off the wagon. Or Shiv published that letter that really messed with him, that outed all of his history with substance abuse and stuff. And so I keep kind of waiting for that to resurface also. And I think that that could play into his arc in this season, is like, he's been on a recovery journey for pretty much this entire show, where he's either trying to stay sober or he's trying to get himself out of the business, which seems to have deeply impacted his mental health. And so, like, the fact that he's being his decisions are changing very frequently. He's being both impulsive and very calculated all the time. And I'm just wondering, A, where his family is, and B, if they are going to like address his actual like personal struggles anymore, or if we're just going to see like CEO Kendall from this point out.
I doubt we'll see any more stuff about his drug struggles this season, because it hasn't been a plotline for so long. I do think the killing the kid will come back, though.
Or that podcast.
not will, but like has a significant possibility of coming back. And maybe the way in which he stomps that out is going to be another plot point along this arc that I just mentioned. So,
yeah.
Okay, Kim, that's the episode. Before we wrap up, we're going to talk about our favorite quotes. Until then, Kim Renfrew, where can people find more of your work on the internet this week?
I'm still covering stuff over on Insider, and you can still find me on Twitter for now, at Kim R. Renfrew.
And I want to just encourage people to, if you enjoy this podcast, become a paid subscriber at decodingtv.com, get ad-free episodes and early access to episodes. And also find us on TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at DecodingTV. We're posting new videos there every week. It's a great time. Give us a follow and you'll get some great, high quality, highly edited stuff over there. I think you'll enjoy it. All right, Kim Renfrew, favorite quote from the episode?
It's got to be said to Greg, quote, "You're an addendum of miscellaneous matters in pencil with a question mark." Which is the best corporate speak for "you don't matter" that I've like ever heard.
Well, and you Greg don't matter, but we still need to talk to you about it because
we still need to tell you.
It's not nothing, but it's as close to nothing as you could possibly get without being nothing.
And then Greg's response being, "Nevertheless."
Very good. Nevertheless, he persisted.
What was yours?
I just like when Kendall connects with Stewie again this episode. He's trying to invite Stewie aboard. And then Stewie says, "My pubes got a little singed last time I went with you," which is just such a very, very vivid image.
Yes.
But captures kind of how personal it must have gotten between the two of them, you know, in season two. So
truly
like that quote as well. All right. Those are our thoughts on this week's episode of Succession. Let us know what you thought at decodingtv@gmail.com. And we'll see you next week for another recap of Succession on HBO. Goodbye.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.